You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 389. Today's Thursday, November 16th, and my name is Steve. I am joined by both Hammy and Curtis. And guys, in tonight's show, we'll weigh in on the Alex Anthopoulos hire, the potential end of the Braves' way, and the looming penalties from MLB. But first, we are joined by baseball columnist Shai Davidi of Sportsnet, who's been covering the Blue Jays since 2011, to get his perspective on Alex Anthopoulos. All right after this quick break. Hello, Shai. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. So I understand you're leaving the GM meetings right now as we're speaking. What was the most interesting thing you saw or covered this week?
I think the most interesting thing, and this is maybe counterintuitive, is how the collective impression I got talking to executives and agents is that nothing really happened. From the people I spoke with, there wasn't substantial movement towards, you know, moot deals or signings of significance. The pace of this offseason seems to be slow. A lot of people seem to be under the impression that things are going to take a while before they start materializing. So, you know, maybe things change, or maybe Jerry DePoto is just building up with tiny little moves for something bigger to come. But it just seems like there's going to be a slow pace to this offseason. We may not see a lot of action until the winter meetings.
Yeah. Makes sense. I mean, yeah, not much to go on with that A's-Seattle deal last night or a couple nights ago. All right, so Shai, let's get to Alex Anthopoulos. I want to start with, I saw a video from a baseball panel with you and Buster Olney. You were talking about Alex's departure from the Blue Jays. And in it, you said you didn't quite understand why he left. And the explanation you typically read is that he felt he wouldn't have the autonomy he wanted when Mark Shapiro came in. Have you gained any better understanding of why he left Toronto?
Sure. You know, and that was that video that you're talking about, I believe, was not very long after he left. And you know, there were going to be, I knew at the time that was a possibility, or before it happened, that was going to be a possibility that Alex wouldn't resign. At the time, I really felt like Alex and Mark Shapiro, the Blue Jays president, CEO, we're going to figure it out. We're going to find some sort of accommodation. But, you know, just seeing how the Blue Jays operate now under Mark Shapiro and GM Ross Atkins versus the way they used to run under Alex Anthopoulos, you know, in a lot of ways, they're just polar opposites. And that's not a criticism of one or the other. But Alex Anthopoulos is much more free-flowing. There's a freelance element to it. It's not that things are disorganized, but it's not the sort of buttoned-down, meticulous, very detail-oriented process that the Blue Jays run under Mark Shapiro. And so, and just kind of, now that I've seen it in operation for a couple of seasons, you know, I think it would have been difficult for both guys. It wouldn't have been much of a very good fit, which is a word Alex used at the time. They're just very different executives in the way that they operate.
All right, so moving on to the Braves, Shai. Alex comes into this team. It's probably its most embarrassing period. Anything close I could think of is like the John Rocker stuff. So, you know, do you think, as he comes in to replace a GM who had alienated his staff, had isolated himself, do you think that there are personality or management style things about Alex that make him, you know, particularly qualified to come into this situation?
Well, I think there are a few things that Alex is going to be, based on, of course, the sense I got covering him. He's going to be super aggressive about things, but he's very meticulous to the rules. And I don't think he'll try to, he will try to push the envelope with things, but I think he knows when to draw the line. You know, just from the outsider's perspective, from the things that I've read, it seems obviously that, you know, John Coppola pushed the line and, you know, just completely erased it. But I think most teams kind of find a way to just get right up against the line of the rules, just hang right on the edge and not teeter past it. And I think that's probably one of Alex Anthopoulos' strengths, is that in any, you know, some of the most creative moves that he pulled off, you know, he traded for Miguel Olivo one off season, bought him out just to get the compensatory draft pick. So he ended up buying a compensatory pick for about $500K, which is what I believe the buyout was. You know, and then, you know, there was a team that complained to Major League Baseball about it, and you know, the Blue Jays kind of laughed. It was like, well, they're only complaining because they didn't think about it first. And so I think, you know, that was the kind of executive work that the Blue Jays did under Anthopoulos. I think I assume that it'll bring the same spirit to the Braves in terms of trying to seek out every advantage possible, but making sure to not stray or violate the rules.
What kind of persona does Alex have with the public? I mean, one very good thing you can say about John Coppolella is that he really struck up a strong relationship with the fans, did a lot of great stuff on Twitter, etc. Will he be sort of a public figure of the front office?
Well, Alex doesn't want to be the face of a franchise, right? He wants his players to be the face of a franchise. But he will communicate very regularly with media, and public will get to see him there. You know, they'll see him at games. He's a tireless worker and things like that. And, you know, he very much wants to explain and wants the public to understand as much as they can why they make the kind of moves that they do, or they will. So, you know, I think that will be something that I think Braves fans can probably expect, is that they'll get pretty reasonable explanations in as much detail as, you know, a team can give out without, you know, so taking away from its proprietary processes and things like that, in terms of trying to understand why a team's making the moves that it does.
So, as you probably know, Shai, the Braves farm system is ranked top one or two, depending on where you look, essentially because of its pitching depth. So, you know, I know that Alex drafted Syndergaard and Stroman. What is your overall opinion of his ability to judge pitching talent? It's going to be such an important part of his immediate time here.
Well, one of the things that they did in the draft was put a very, very high emphasis on pitching. And, you know, you're right, Syndergaard and Stroman and Aaron Sanchez and Daniel Norris and dozens of other pitching prospects were acquired and drafted during his watch. A lot of them got traded away. But so from a philosophical perspective, the approach that the Blue Jays took was that it's hard to convince free agent pitchers to come to the American League East because they just get their brains beaten. And pitching is extremely expensive to buy and difficult to acquire via trade. So, and it's always a commodity in demand. So if you draft and develop it, then you always have a currency with which to trade from. And that's what we saw the Blue Jays do over the course of his tenure as GM in Toronto.
How beholden did he get to his draft picks, right? I mean, so John Coppolella, you know, in the weeks leading up to the offseason, was very clear about, you know, we're going to stay the course. We're really not going to trade a lot of our chips here. We're going to let them mature, etc. Does Alex follow that same sort of approach or not?
Well, I mean, if you look at the way that he operated the offseason before the 2015 season, during the 2015 season, they traded away dozens of prospects, I mean, of different caliber, but they always kept certain guys. I think really what a good front office is able to do is they're able to identify the prospects they believe have the best chance of succeeding and try to sell high on other prospects, on the prospects who have less certainty to them, before they end up collapsing, their value ends up collapsing. And so, you know, the Blue Jays by no means they moved a lot of inventory in their system throughout Alex's tenure. And of all the pitchers that they've given away, you know, the one guy that they regret is Noah Syndergaard, and perhaps Jeff Hoffman will join them. But everyone else that they move, none of them really breaks their heart.
What is his relationship to advanced metrics and sabermetrics? I know that I've read when I think I'm getting this right, that when he got to Toronto, he invested a good deal of money in the scouting department. So can you tell us the relationship between the scouting department and advanced metrics and sort of how he ran things in Toronto in that regard?
Sure. What he always wanted to do in Toronto was he wanted to, the reason he invested so heavily in the scouting department was because he wanted to get, he thought there was an advantage to be had in terms of getting more looks at players and having more people, more different looks at players in order to kind of really compare that against the analytical data that they were able to put together. And in terms of that, you know, by getting the two things, you know, does the data match what your eyes tell you? And if not, why? And is there an opportunity you find, is there an opportunity created by that discrepancy? So it was very much an attempt to marry both the best parts of traditional scouting and the best elements of analytics. And I think, you know, you see a lot of teams like the Cubs, the Red Sox, you know, a lot of the really elite clubs, the Houston Astros have stepped back from the traditional scouting aspects in recent years. But that's what a lot of teams have been able to do and be really effective at.
All right, Shai, last question. So, you know, there's a lot of, I think it's really just fan talk, of course, on Twitter about, well, you know, he has a relationship with Josh Donaldson. He could move prospects and bring him to Atlanta. Do you, if you were to hazard a guess, do you think that he would try to make a splash in his first offseason with the Braves, lay low and sort of get a better sense of it? I guess maybe my question is, you know, he came into Toronto, right? Wasn't it 2 weeks after he traded Halliday?
Yeah, that was different because Halliday had requested a trade and he had no choice. So, you know, the Blue Jays had wanted, if they had their druthers, they would have kept Roy Halliday at that point. But, you know, he had taken a couple below market extensions. The Blue Jays were pulling back. They were going to go through a rebuild. And Halliday was towards the back end of his career and didn't want to live through that. So Alex isn't the splash type. You know, he would do something. I mean, he likes premium elite players. You know, he's not sort of this, you know, let's be collectively good, although he wants to try and get and amass as many elite players and put them all across the diamond as possible. But he's not the splash type to make a move just for a little bit of attention or to kind of impress people. He only makes moves if he firmly believes in the merits of it. So, you know, if a move fits within his longer term plan for the organization, then certainly he would go for it. But, you know, just again, from the surface or from a distance looking at the situation, you know, Josh Donaldson's got a year left. He's a win now type player, and I'm not sure the Braves are going to be in a win now type of situation next year.
Sure. All right, Shai Davidi, thank you very much for your time. Folks, you can read Shai at sportsnet.ca. He's a great follow on Twitter. And Shai, we really appreciate your time. Have a safe trip home.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys, we got Shai's perspective on the Anthopoulos hire. Ham, what about you? What do you like and dislike about it?
Well, I'm excited overall. I am excited by it. You know, there has been a pall cast over this franchise since the copy news broke. And then just this long, just dragged out process of just get it over with. I made the joke to you guys in a text that we can't even be nationally disgraced effectively at this point. So
we're the slow and boring.
Yeah, we can't even, like, nobody even cares anymore. They're like, oh, the Braves, yeah, whatever. It's like, can't we just at least grab one headline? So I'm excited about this. The things that I like about him, I like that, you know, he has the reputation for being very hardworking. I think this is a lot of being a good GM is just outworking the other guys. So all the rumors about that are great. But also, you know, Copy had that same reputation, so that's not enough. I think the part where
he's not a big friggin' cheater is good.
He's not a big cheater. But I think even more importantly, and I'll get to that in a second, I think even more importantly is that the reports are he's very likable. He's a very gregarious and affable guy, which I think, as we discovered, Copy was not so much. And I think you need to be likable to be successful as a GM. I think you need to get people to want to pick up the phone, to want to read your text, to want to have a conversation with you, who respects you. I think Copy's reputation and his personality was a contributing factor to his undoing, because it came out in all this that all GMs bend the rules a little bit, right? There's no one who's just like hard and fast, but Copy took that to an extreme. But I do think that if he was more likable, maybe it would not have come down just crashing on him as hard. Who knows? I don't know if likable really gets you anywhere, but I certainly like cheering for someone who's likable. So he has that going for him. And then I guess the third thing that I do like about him is his resume. He's done it, right?
He did it in the AL East.
Yeah, he did it with the Blue Jays, and then he did it with the Dodgers. The dude has had success. The lights will not be too big for him. There won't be a learning curve. He knows what to do. You know, he's got ambitions to do even bigger things in his career. He's young. So, I mean, this is his moment in a lot of ways. He wanted to have full control of the Blue Jays. He didn't get it. You know, there was a little bit of a waiting period where he worked with the Dodgers. And now this is his time, so I'm excited for that. He's hungry for this. I think he's got something to prove. And I think we will be the benefactors of that. Go ahead. I mean, I have some concerns, but not really. But what were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say I'm even more excited, I think. I think it's kind of absurd that we got this guy. I'm so happy that we didn't end up with Dayton Moore or Hendry from the Cubs or the guy from the Nationals. I mean, this guy was about to get a 5-year extension, was a star in the front office ranks, walked away from it, then, like you said, Ham, goes to the Dodgers and has a bunch of success and learns a bunch of more baseball operations stuff there. I mean, I think it just could not have gone better than to land him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my only concerns is can he do it with a low payroll? Is Liberty going to give him the money to be that creative and aggressive guy that he was able to do, you know, that he was able to be when he was with the Dodgers, who have been the number one payroll for the past couple of years, and the Blue Jays, who were constantly in the top 10. I mean, when he was doing all that he was doing, they were a top 10 payroll. And so the Braves are not that. You know, we're averaging 19th, 20th in the league in payroll. So can he win with that? And it's to be seen.
The good news is the payroll is heading up, right? I mean, it was like 120 last year. It should be higher each year for the next few years as the ballpark keeps bringing in revenue. I mean, there is that to hope on.
And they've also got pieces in place that they're not going to have to spend much money on. So until they're up for extensions and things like that, so they don't have to really break the bank on a payroll to necessarily field a team right now, because they've got such quality young players in the system.
But they're going to have to make a big move, don't you think?
Sure. Multiple. I mean, they're going to have to bring in four or five players to make this team take not even the first step, but two steps, three steps toward what the ultimate objective is. He is, I like that he still believes a lot in scouting. He created the biggest scouting department in Major League Baseball when he was with the Blue Jays, which I still think is very important. Obviously, the Sabre stuff, that is certainly what dominates the game right now. And that's, of course, very important, a very important aspect of the game. But he hasn't given up on sort of scouting and all those types of things that are such an integral part of baseball as well. I like that. I like that there's some old schoolness to him. I also like, frankly, that he's not like Dayton Moore would have been, sort of of the tree of Bobby Cox and John Schuerholz that we're sort of going outside of our comfort zone here and bringing somebody in that will have a different perspective on it. I got a little nervous and I texted you guys when he was doing his press conference and sort of talked about the Braves way, really didn't say those words, but sort of was pecking around at that and that he would lean a lot on Bobby and John Schuerholz and John Hart and people that were already in the organization. And I hope that that's not, I hope that frankly, that was sort of just saying, I mean, I really want him to be his own man. Obviously,
you have to Curtis, as we said to you, he's got to pay some lip service.
He's paying respect, of course.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean, I'm hoping that that's what that is. I mean, I think that he has got obviously the president of operations job too. So, and they're saying the only person he's going to answer to is Terry McGuirk, which, you know, that's good. That means that he will be the decider.
Yeah. You know, the tool chest is full, right? I mean, Coppy did an amazing job in that way of building up the farm system. And of course, I wouldn't have drawn it up this way, but it kind of works out that you've got all these pieces and now this new guy who's not beholden to these prospects, right? He has like total objectivity.
Which will help him when some of the sanctions come down. Yes. Sorry. We'll get to that later. Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, he's not beholden to a trade that was made and, you know, I want to see this guy through, even if, you know, there's part of my brain telling me he doesn't have it or whatever. I mean, he is just coming in clean and these are just pieces and he's got a lot of smarts. I mean, the guy's aggressive and creative. It was clear in his time in Toronto. So he gets a lot of pieces to put this puzzle together. And I like that, you know, among all the things that I was bummed about with all the Copy stuff, one of them was I had grown to really love the crazy aggressive trades and the, you know, the clever moves he was doing. I mean, like we get some of that back with Anthopoulos because that is his style. He's not just going to sit pat. I really just think it's kind of the best that could have been made of this situation.
You think he sticks with Snicker for the entire first season?
Depends on how the team does.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't think he's going to feel like he needs to if the team loses 20 of 30 to start the season.
Which is also good. I mean, nothing against Brian Snicker, but he's sort of a mascot at this point. And, So, for those that are might getting a little nervous, Ronald Acuña is not going anywhere.
He is
100% committed to Ronald Acuña. So people don't get nervous that he will come in and not see the value in that player.
Yeah. He's not
all these. Yeah. All these pitching prospects, you're going to have to start moving some of these guys. You know, like you said, it's important for him to sort of look at this in a fresh perspective. He is aggressive. And you know, a lot of, there's a good breakdown on every single move he ever did as a GM of the Jays. I keep wanting to say Rays and everybody else. It's the Jays, Talking Chop. And a lot of what he did that didn't pan out is not even necessarily his fault. I mean, a lot of injury problems, you know, I mean, that's just going to be part of it, that you're going to trade for a guy who's a really high prospect. Like when they traded Roy Halladay to the Phillies, and Drabek, who was the big pitching prospect they got back, is just, he's had arm problems the whole time and has never been able to end up being a player, you know, and there's a lot, it's sort of littered with a lot of that stuff.
Although the one move is when he went all in with Burley and Dickey. Where I even when that move
I don't made, get the Dickey move. I'm
I don't
with
either.
You,
so I hope we. I hope. I mean, hindsight's 20/20 with that. But because he was coming off a Cy Young, but
he's a knuckleball pitcher. It's a stupid trade. You don't bring regardless of the guy won a Cy Young. The knuckleball pitcher is never going to be your number one pitcher, and that's basically what he. For those who don't know, he traded Noah Syndergaard for R.A. Dickey
and Travis Darno.
Yeah. So two really good players that the Mets ended up getting out of that for an old knuckleball pitcher.
Yeah.
That
so I, that's what I, that's if I had a, what I'm worried about is some sort of splashy move like that where he lacks judgment, right? And maybe he learned from it, and that doesn't happen again.
But. And look, you know, Shai was very clear about he's not about making splashy moves. He's not about trying to make it about him. So, hopefully he's just learned from that, and that's not the kind of thing we see.
And the Roy Halladay move, you know, as great as Roy Halladay was, obviously, for the Blue Jays, it was time. They were a fourth place team. You got to get what you can out of a player of that quality.
Well, and he was demanding to get out, as Shai corrected me. Like, he wanted out.
Yeah.
You know, they needed to do it.
And he shed them of the ridiculous Vernon Wells contract. So, you know, he did some good things on that maybe were not fan favorites. You get some old players that people are really attached to, when those are tough decisions to make, but I don't think anybody would argue with those. The one thing I did notice, there's a lot of first round draft picks that they had that didn't end up signing with the Blue Jays. And I don't know if that's a result of them not wanting to play for the Blue Jays, that the appeal of playing for Toronto was not something that overcame their desire to not play for Toronto, but it did seem that it was sort of rhythmic that there was a lot of first round draft picks that did not sign with the Jays under his tutelage.
All right, so Kurt, we talked about a little bit. So we learned during the introduction that John Hart is out. He's out of baseball ops, and missing from the podium that day were John Scherholz or Bobby. It was McGurk and Alex Anthopoulos on that stage that day. So what do you think about all this? Is the have we sort of turned the page here?
Yeah, I think that's what I sort of touched on it before. I mean, this is a young guy. Obviously, Coppy was a young guy, too, but he had been in with the Braves for a little while before he became the GM. I really think that this is the end of it. And I think it's frankly because of the results that we've had beyond the scandal that we're having to deal with right now in the slowest March possible. But I mean, what will we remember from the John Hart era? Other than this, I mean, yeah. Other than losing and this, I think you'd be pressed if 10 years from now, if you were to ask anybody remind me about the John Hart era.
Well,
what does he get credit for? What do you give him credit for?
If you can say the farm system, but that'll all have to play itself out to fruition because we have no idea what our farm system is going to produce.
Yeah.
And either you believe that Hart was not paying attention to anything these last couple of years, and so he doesn't get credit for the farm system, or he lied and was urging Coppy to break the rules. And I mean, either way, it's not great for John Hart.
And even worse, frankly, in that regard, because now this punishment that's going to be handed out by Major League Baseball, which from every report gets more and more harsh every single day, that's hung on him, too. So,
well, that's it. So either he gets credit for nothing, right? Either he wasn't helping Coppy and I don't know what he was doing, or he was mentoring Coppy and he takes credit for the way that Coppy rebuilt the farm system and where we are now and taking it from one of the worst in baseball to one of the best in baseball. But if you give him that credit, then you have to give him the blame for these penalties that are about to come down on us. And I think that's what happened. I think that Coppy was an easy one to cast aside, but Hart, you know, the Braves way, and Hart was a friend of Scherholz, and you know, like they just
and
like,
his contract's about up. Sorry, I didn't mean to jump in.
No, but you're right. So they're like, you know what? We're not going to make a scene. We're not going to unceremoniously fire John Hart. We're going to push him to the side, let his contract expire, and move on. But I don't. I am hard pressed to say, put a finger on John Hart by himself deserves credit for this as in his role as a Brave, as part of the Braves organization.
And I can't say it enough. The one thing above anything else that I wanted to happen out of this mess was that John Hart was gone. Yeah. And we got it. And a good GM. I mean, it's kind of insane how it all worked out. All right, guys, next up, the impending penalty is about to come down for Major League Baseball right after this quick break. So, Ham, based on reporting from Ken Rosenthal and the Atlanta beat reporters the last couple of days, it looks like the penalties will be about what we expected. A loss of at least one of the Latin American players signed. A banning of the ability to sign international players for at least 1 year. So now that we're getting close to it, what do you think about the penalties that are about to come down?
We deserve them. I mean, I hate to say it. I hate that I root for a team that cheated, but, you know, if another team had done this, we'd be losing our minds. We would be losing if one of the top prospects had been.
Look at the Yankees, those cheaters.
Yeah, holding this person away and paying for an apartment for him so that he can't be scouted, and then they get to just. So, I mean, so we did it, and it's wrong. You know, it's just. I don't know. I don't want to win by cheating. So I feel like we just got to take our lumps. We're going to lose Maitán. I'm just ready for
that. It's just going to happen. Yeah,
it's going to happen. And
it's kind of interesting what's come out the last few days about how not impressed the Braves have been with him this year, and that he put on a bunch of weight and was not looking good at the plate, and maybe it's not the biggest loss after all.
Yeah. I mean, well, it certainly makes it feel better that we're going to lose
him. Sort of greasing the skids.
Yeah, when you say those things. I didn't want to date her anyway.
Ham, did we touch a nerve there?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Getting all autobiographical.
Yeah, no. This is nothing like my real life. So I think, we deserve him. And so I said it sort of the top. I wish we could just we could hear them. All this waiting and anticipation and fear could go away. And we just move on. And we made our bed. We got to lie in it. And then we got to just move on.
The shame of it, Ham, is in your sentence, if we as the front office, they deserve it. If we as the fans, we don't deserve
it.
That is the shame in all this.
But it is the hand that we've been dealt.
Yeah, we can't decouple it.
Yeah, but I agree. I totally agree. I feel gypped. I feel a little duped. Like I really I was surprised by the news, and maybe I'm just naive, that I just remember our interview with Coppy, and I remember how Steve, you talked to him, and he was driving down to Orlando with the family, and he was nervous about the interview. And are you going to put this on here? And do you mind if I talk to my wife? I mean, it was a very human thing, and it was endearing in a lot of ways. And so I think that was started to sow the seeds of me really liking Coppy, and then this whole movement in Coppy We Trust just began, right? And he started making all these moves, and we were with them 100%. And then the story comes out that, oh, wow, you know, he really was divisive in the front office, and people were scared for their jobs and all these things. And he created this culture of fear and just not really positivity. And then this comes out, I feel duped, right? I'm like, so you have these moments of like, I don't know what to believe anymore. I mean, all the news headlines today are people that you thought were good people getting accused of all these things. And so, I mean, it's just like it's a reset moment for us. I think it's nice that Anthopoulos is a complete restart, like you said, Kurt. Like, no ties to anything. We're just completely resetting and putting all of this behind us so that we can just focus on moving forward. But it sucks. It sucks.
Yeah, I bet it's the class. I bet it's the whole international signing class, which is disappointing also because
you're talking about the class that Maitán came in, the 15-16 class. Yeah.
And it's a lot of high prospects. I mean, I know I talked about this a few shows ago. It's just not him. I mean, it's quite a few of our top prospects that would be lost, but I bet they all go. It's also the money that they invested in those guys lose. And there's a lot of our offensive prospects that are going to go. There's a big catching prospect that'll go. So, it was good to see that it's not going to impact the minor league draft, that they don't think there were any players involved there, which is nice.
Rosenthal came out and said none of the domestic signings are going to be impacted.
But, I mean, they're going to be on probation, which will also impact the team because they won't be. And, I mean, obviously they were going to be on a holding pattern with international signings anyway, because they spent so much in that one class. But, you know, they'll probably be a couple of years before they can get back in that. And so that'll, over the long haul, that'll probably impact them, because that's players that they'll miss out on. Just
it doesn't feel like completely killing, though. You know what I mean? Like, these kids are really young. I mean, we won't know what it would have become to some degree, but it doesn't seem like total death penalty.
Don't you feel 100% certain that in 5 or 6 years from now, one of the dudes that gets lost in this is going to be some Jose Altuve or somebody like that?
Well,
because
probably. That's how it goes.
Pretty darn convinced that that's going to happen. And I'm not saying it's my time, but yeah, it's going to be one of the guys.
See the Texas Rangers after the friggin'
Teixeira deal.
Yes, exactly. Elvis Andrus and Neftali, whatever.
Feliz.
Neftali, yeah.
No.
All right, guys, anything else?
I'm ready to move on. I'm just excited. Like this, I'm so, the timing, I wish we could have had the sanctions or the penalties first and then signed Anthopoulos. Can we come, is that what we're calling him? Like, can we not call him Auntie or Ant? I guess that sounds sort of weird. Ant-Man? Something cool like we had.
Yeah, you keep
that
you
sounds
keep,
kind of lame.
You keep it? pushing that Ant-Man, and it's
I'm going
just,
to.
I like AA.
All right, I'll go with AA. What about Folt 45?
What about we never speak of that again, and in fact we edit it out and no one ever hears it?
Did we talk about Terry Pendleton and Eddie Perez and getting
Eddie
fired?
Perez? No.
It felt like if. I mean, meh, but it also felt like it was like symbolic. Like, you know, we gotta shift things up here, but for some reason we have this weird allegiance to Snitker, so let's get rid of TP and Eddie Perez.
Well, that's the thing. Let's keep Snit and not TP and Eddie Perez.
I mean, Walt Weiss is exciting. He was a good player. I mean, I think that's, you know.
Do you understand the definition of the word exciting?
No.
Because he does not excite me in any way, shape, or form. He was a horrible manager in Colorado. Maybe he'll – I don't know what he'll bring.
He has experience. He brings experience, Kurt.
And he's likable, just like Ant-Man.
All right. Before Hammy throws out any more nicknames, we're going to end the show. So we will be back throughout the offseason as things develop. And assuming that's not over the course of the next week, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. I hope everyone has a good time with friends and family. And that is the show. So remember, we are at our new home at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our shows, to check out our blogs, and to post in our comments section. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com.